Hey guys, so I have an idea for a podcast.
Tell us, Ash.
Yeah, it's like, it's not only friends, because that would not be appropriate. Oh. But we are friends. We are only friends. But we're not selling
brothers.
Selling subscriptions to this podcast, to be clear. It's actually going to be free. Though if we make it big, we might. But just for now, we're doing like all in style. Let's just hang out and talk. But let's talk about interesting trending topics that we think are worth just rapping on and digging into. Is everything is on the table. Nothing's off limits except for Tim.
Tim can only talk about certain things.
He's right. Only allowed to talk about certain things.
We
he's
like it.
An ordained minister.
That's right.
In a highly respectable denomination.
That's right.
The rest of us, anything goes.
Yeah. We're only governed by the dictates of our conscience in the scriptures. So,
yes.
Well, I got to be hemmed in a little bit. I am a deacon, but. Yeah. Not
just
as hemmed in as
just kidding.
Yes. I can get us started. If you guys are cool with that.
Yeah, start. I'm going to keep looking.
Here. Okay.
I've got mine already.
So we got different topics. We got Bitcoin. We have like reform theology world. And there's politics and the national scene. So this was something I saw. This is from Ron Paul. Okay. He tweeted. He said this. He says, that didn't take long. A candidate elected to end current wars and avoid new ones, Donald Trump as president, has significantly escalated the war on Yemen and is now threatening to attack Iran. He is also threatening Russia, again, with punitive tariffs. Why is it, or what is it about the White House that turns every resident into a warmonger? And then this dude, Dave Banner, just says, he retweets it and says, the world is full of pretenders. And then there's Ron Paul. So, jumping into the deep end, to be a little political, what do you think of Ron Paul's take on current events? Is he being curmudgeon-y? Is he being honest and right? What do you think?
Who's going to talk first?
It is curmudgeon-y, but I think it's
those two
wise
things.
Caution.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like scripture says, you know, you don't put your hope in the strength of a man or in the horse or
princes.
They will disappoint you. And Donald Trump, you know, people have a lot of high hopes for him. Christians have a lot of hopes for him, but yeah, there's very disappointing things about him and there's unbelievable momentum in the way that, you know, geopolitics has worked for decades that is very hard to overcome and feels and seems completely normal and right to a lot of people.
Yeah. I think the one exception to that otherwise very astute observation is Trump first term. Like Trump didn't start a new war. First president in forever to not start a new war. So yeah, I don't know what to make of what's the country you just said?
Yemen.
Yeah, the escalating the Yemen stuff. I haven't even
the poorest country in the Middle East.
Yeah, I just haven't paid any attention. Like other than I know there was Christians who were there who were being like persecuted and stuff, but. Yeah, I don't understand. I mean, again, people who are tangential to Trump who've gotten into different positions, like you have Tulsi Gabbard, who's talking tough on what she, you know, and like getting rid of the status quo of, you know, whatever she's in charge of, and then the Patel guy.
You did a Trump impression while imitating Tulsi.
I did.
What does it sound like?
Oh
no, do a Tulsi voice.
deep voice. Sounds more managed. But then yeah, you've got the Dev or not Dev Patel. Whatever is it Dev?
Cash Patel.
Yeah. Again, he's like talking tough. What he's gonna do? Day one, Epstein list, the whole thing. Yeah, and then he's talking about, you know, whatever. Like he's none of that stuff. He's talking about other stuff. And then who's the other one who got in there? Somebody else.
RFK.
RFK.
He's moving.
Yeah, but he's again. He's now talking about weird stuff too. Like Dave Smith was just talking about all these things too. But like, I just think it is this weird thing about you get in there, and then there's these pressures that you don't know about. There's way more to the story that you don't know about, and so these loud boasts that you've made they don't always just come through, and you come out looking like a dummy, and you come out looking like you're a coward, even if that's not actually the reason.
So it's easy for Ron Paul to armchair it.
Well, yeah, because he's an 85-year-old man who's just like vibe coding, you know, back in Texas or wherever he's living.
What would he have been saying if Blue Team won? Is Blue Team?
Oh no, he's
any different?
No,
I mean,
no.
We would be in World War III.
Correct.
Right. So I think that's what's we're in the context of this two-party system, right? So yeah. He lives in kind of idealistic land, you know, mm-hmm. and I agree with him
with all yes. libertarians.
I wish that we didn't have two parties, but
yeah,
here we are. And I think what's more interesting is just watching the shift that has occurred, because Blue Team used to be all about, you know, individual liberties and do whatever you want, yeah. and kind of more in line with like the classic libertarian idea, and also the anti-war party. Mm-hmm. But now it's flipped, you know. And I think a lot of boomers probably don't recognize that.
Yeah.
They might wake up with strange bedfellows if they realized who was backing the whole Ukraine conflict.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, they figured it out once. I mean, you started having realignment with, you know, RFK and some of these guys. You're starting to see some of it, but.
What's the meme? My tax dollars? Somehow also my tax dollars?
Yeah. Both and then sides also people. Somehow my tax dollars.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I just think. I mean, then you could get it. We don't have to get full conspiracy mode, but like, I just think, I mean, the Patel thing, it's like, how do you go into work every day knowing that a lot of these guys could just drop either intel about you, because we have the largest security apparatus that literally is spying on everything you've ever, every internet search, every, like, it's just staggering the amount of information in. Yeah, I just don't understand how you would navigate that dynamic, just given what we do, like what we do in other countries, what we've been doing for decades. Like, how do you go in there with all of the same boldness that you first went in? How do you stand there when, again, there's people who've been there for longer, who will be there long after you're gone, who, you know, it's crazy. I don't know how you fix it. I don't know how you do much of anything with it. It's confusing to me.
I feel like this feeds in great to the tweet that I wanted to put out there. So
can I give one quick thought about the Ron Paul?
Go ahead.
So I don't think I agree with him. So, and it's good you
mentioned.
Tell us
more about you being wrong. Let's go. just kidding. Yeah.
So I'm one of the pretenders.
My tweet's also an alternate take on this.
Yeah. So okay. You're right. So the first term, he didn't start any wars, but what did he do with ISIS? What did he do with terrorism? Like, so he went hard, like those crazy stories that the dude on the podcast that told the story about like how Trump went in and he's like, he's talking to the Al-Qaeda guys.
Yeah.
And he's like, you see this picture? This is your house.
He handed it to him. He handed the head of, I think it was ISIS or Hamas, somebody, hands him a picture.
No, this is in Afghanistan.
Yeah,
and it's related to our troops and stuff.
He hands them a picture, and it's a picture of the guy's house from like a drone. And he's like, "If any American dies in the next however many days, like we're gonna bomb your house. We know where you like the whole thing." There was no Americans killed for a whole year, and it's just like,
so
crazy stuff like
so
that.
So this whole like, so he wasn't like. Totally a pacifist, mm-hmm. right? He led with strength, mm-hmm. And he did take care of terrorism, but he didn't nation build. There wasn't the globalist military industrial complex kind of like, let's just have another excuse to spend more money on, mm-hmm. on weapons. So
yeah.
I see the potentially the Yemen thing not as war escalation as much as I think he views it, at least with as in that terrorism mm-hmm. kind of Pax Americana. We need to keep mm-hmm. the tradeways open, and I think Russia is just like, you know, peace is not going to be as easy as you can claim it's going to be on a your like stump speech. Like you can mm-hmm. say day one we're going to make a peace, but it's like. As the other meme said, when Tucker Carlson sat down with Putin and he's like, tell me about why is there a war right now? Well, it began, right, when the dinosaurs first roamed the earth. This happened, right? So there's a history there.
Yeah.
And Trump, with all of his deal making, he can't just walk in and be like, it's fixed.
I feel like there's just been a lot of takes that these tariffs are like an act of war. So an alternate take, this is the tweet. So Ryan Cohen, CEO of GameStop, says, I can't wait for my $10,000 made in the USA iPhone. Michael Saylor responds, you're going to love your $1 million made in the USA Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. So the implication here is, of course, the $10,000 iPhone, because the tariffs are going to cause everything to go up. And then Michael Saylor, I guess, connecting the dots and saying the tariff strategy is either purposefully or inadvertently part of a strategy to move to some sort of new world order, you know, hyper Bitcoinization, you know. So do you agree with Michael Saylor's take on that? And do you think that the administration is doing it like purposefully or inadvertently?
So you think he's tying tariffs to Bitcoin going to a million?
Well, it seems like that's what he's saying. It seems like it's like, yeah, you're going to get a 10,000. He's agreeing. He's like, you're going to get a $10,000 iPhone, but also at the same time, you're going to get $1 million Bitcoin because of that.
Mm. Yeah.
This like is where, tariffs just accelerated?
Yeah.
Or it's like had to happen.
Yeah. I mean, again, this is where I
have to print so much money.
Yes, exactly. Like, I mean, that makes sense. I don't see how those two things wouldn't be correlated.
Well, Peter Schiff was claiming that, you know, the tariffs are going to cause a lot of money to flow back into our economy or like keep it in our economy, which is going to cause inflation to happen. So that's one take as to why Bitcoin would go to a million, because there's just more dollars floating around here instead of us exporting them out to other countries, Triffin dilemma style.
Yeah, we were gonna watch it. I still don't know what to think about tariffs, Triffin dilemma, because you've got I have my intuitions to, you know, call back to other things, but you have guys like Brent Johnson, okay, Milkshake Theory guy, who's like the Triffin dilemma is the single greatest thing that could ever happen in the United States. Like it's the superpower that we have that everybody else is, you know, everybody else needs dollars. They don't have them. And so if we start doing tariffs, then it actually exacerbates the problem. And it's like, yeah, I understand that. But then it just basically, I don't know, to me, and this is where I feel like I still don't have a good enough handle on it. It's like, to me, that doesn't seem like the end of the thing. It's like, at what point does somebody just take the ball and go home, or we have a kinetic war, you know, like, or whatever. Like, and then I have other people who tell me like kinetic war is unlikely because the cost to everyone is too high. It's like mutually assured destruction to everybody's economies, who are all levered to the hilt. Now China has like four times as much debt as we do. So you can argue that we're in a better position, and there's people arguing that we're in a better position. So I'll read this one because this goes along with here. Zero Hedge says China has three options: concede defeat to whatever terms Trump demands. Number two, devalue the yuan by 20-40%. Number three, unleash the biggest fiscal stimulus in its history, talking $2 to $3 trillion, which will push its debt off the chart. Yeah. And so then there's other people who are like, oh, there's more options than those. So I just feel like there's so many. I feel like I can't speak at all confidently.
Well, there's knee-jerk takes.
Yes, exactly.
Especially with just the market crashing in the last couple of days. And, oh, it's decoupled.
Yes. Yeah. No.
I mean, it is interesting to see like Bitcoin holding steady while gold goes down.
Yep.
I don't really understand that one, especially given Peter Schiff's arguments on it. It seems like money would flow back into gold as well. But
holding steady at 78.9.
Well, it's now crashing in after hours. We're in after hours trading right now in Bitcoin.
There is no after hours in Bitcoin.
It's, you know, it's the weekend. Come on, man.
Okay, so
price predictions for market open tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I was going to say.
We're recording on Sunday.
Let's get us in. We'll see actually whether we're worth listening to or not.
Yeah, no, I what's the even the foolish thought wise when he keeps his mouth closed? So I'll stay there.
Here's our wise brother here. So I mean, I've seen some people saying, "Hey, you don't have a Black Monday when everyone's calling for it, right?" If everyone's saying now, a bunch of the futures are already like 5% down.
Okay, Bitcoin Twitter's calling for it right now.
Well, so the market futures and all like are saying, "Hey, there's going to be a huge stock market drop." But then the question is, if everyone's saying it's going to be that, like how often do you have huge market crashes that catch no one by surprise, right? Isn't it usually like, where did this come from? or and it things move over the weekend. So Bitcoin is sniffing out a big like sell-off, I think. I mean, it's dropped 4 or 5%.
Well, this would be an argument for the decoupling because Bitcoin's the only thing open right now, except for the futures markets.
Yeah.
So yeah, Bitcoin's going down because it's the only thing they can sell.
That I talk about that a lot with people. It's just like when things are crashing, you don't sell what you want to, you sell what you can. And so Bitcoin,
like, well, it'll be interesting to see what happens tomorrow. Yeah. If the markets actually do tank again, does Bitcoin go down with them or does it rebound? Right? Because if it rebounds, it continues to add support for the decoupling thesis.
Yep.
Right? Because now, like, it's selling off right now because it's the only thing they can sell. But then during trading hours,
now it's
going to go back up.
So, yeah, is this like in anticipation? And then tomorrow, it's like, it's a good question.
But the other thing is even in that case, I still feel like there's, if the market tanks enough, there's going to be enough people trying to cover their shorts, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
So, or their longs, whatever the opposite, you know.
Yeah.
Yep. They got to cover their. And their margin calls, so they're going to have to sell something.
And when the tide goes out, you know who's swimming without any shorts. Right?
All right.
You got one?
All right, I've got one. Okay, yeah. this is actually apropos from our brother Tim here. So this is from James Wood. James Wood is become an acquaintance, I would say friend. He's a pastor in the PCA. He is teaching at Redeemer Seminary in Ontario. One of my favorite just people that I've become friends with and followed on Twitter because he just is, he's a mature guy. He's thoughtful. Again, don't always agree with him, but there's nobody who I always agree with. So I just, he kind of fills in a lot of my weaknesses, really speaks to them. So he tweeted this the other day. If a pastor faithfully attends to his calling to shepherd Christ's flock under his care and to prepare to preach the word regularly, how does he have time to speak intelligently on developments in the news and social media? Your MDiv didn't deliver omnicompetence, and your pastoral duties aren't primarily to your quote unquote followers online. Many, if not most, battles waged in those spaces distract from your primary vocation. Further, speaking up on issues beyond your training and expertise while falling predictably into tribal talking points dilutes your witness because you become just another cog in the partisan machine. So how do you think?
It's true.
I definitely think it's true. So again, how do you, Tim, navigate? Because we're in a moment where I feel like, I mean, where a lot of people, there's a lot of pent up frustration from like the last 4 years of Christians who felt like their pastors didn't take strong political stands. They felt like there was a time to do this and they didn't. And so they were drawn towards Christian leaders who were willing to do that. How do you think about which things are worthy of your, again, worthy of your focus, your attention, and you're using your voice to do that? Like, how do you, again, local things versus how do you weigh that all out? What does that look like in your mind?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a really hard dilemma. I think we live in a society where everyone has all kinds of opinions about everything that they immediately are broadcasting out to the whole entire world. And you're hearing and seeing all of the opinions of everybody out in the whole entire world all the time. And so it just creates this insane, chaotic echo chamber of, well, what do you think about this? You know, you're getting news blasted to you all the time about this horrible thing happening or this, you know, the government did this horrible thing. And it creates this kind of illusion, I think, that you can know about everything and you can speak to everything, which is not true. And it's not wise to always be jumping around. And, you know, it's really bad for you spiritually and mentally and physically. It is true, I think, that a lot of pastors in the last 5 years have shown a great deal of cowardice in speaking to things or not speaking to things, especially around a lot of the COVID lockdown things. And some of it is understandable. Having been a pastor, you know, we live in a really amped up, polemical time. People are really emotional about politics. It's really hard to know and to make those judgment calls. But yeah, it is true. I think a lot of pastors really dropped the ball. A lot of churches did. But yeah, I don't know. I think what you do and say on social media is one thing. What you do and say from the pulpit is another thing. I think you have to be pretty careful in terms of that. And I think sometimes people think your pulpit should be like the way social media is. I have tried to be careful to speak to controversial issues more in person when I can, when you can have more of a feedback dynamic with people. You can read their body language.
I think sometimes the pulpit is and can be the place to speak to hard things, but mm-hmm. you're also speaking to a whole group of people
yep.
who you kind of need to read it in terms of what does this church need the most, mm-hmm. you know, and it's tempting to use the pulpit to grind your axe mm-hmm. against the people mm-hmm. in the church that are irritating you yep. or bugging you. And I just think you got to be really careful. Your main calling is to preach the word and yep. to apply it. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't always want to apply to every single specific issue
yeah.
that we want it to.
Yeah.
And there is a great deal, I think, of freedom for Christians to disagree about sure. all kinds of things. And you know, there's been 2,000 years of Christians saying, no, you know, the church has to do this or Christians have to do that. And that can be abused.
Yeah.
You can become real lackadaisical about it. And I'm like, mm-hmm. well, nothing matters or nothing goes.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. It's really hard. But I think I've tended to err on the side of be gracious towards your pastor and mm-hmm. be patient.
Yeah.
It's a hard job. It's a hard calling.
Yep.
And their main call is to feed the sheep with the word and with the sacraments,
yep.
not to be the political commentator. Because yeah, James Wood is right.
Yeah.
Sometimes being a pastor gives you the illusion that you – because you're a spiritual religious guy,
yeah.
you can and you should speak to all the kinds of things.
Yep.
But you don't know that much about these things. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. it's hard enough to study the word well
yeah.
and to teach it clearly
mm-hmm.
and to speak into all kinds of personal issues and marriage issues and spiritual yeah. issues in people's lives. But yeah, I think our social media 24/7 news cycle culture gives you this temptation to
sure.
I got to speak to all of it.
What would you say to somebody who's like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. Like you want the pastor to be speaking, you know, authoritatively. Again, it's submitting to his job description. Like you're to teach the word. So then like, where do you see, like, who do you think should be speaking? If there are people who are dedicating to these things.
Christian podcasters.
So like, I mean, who are the people, maybe I'll just ask you this, who are there people in the Christian world who, like, who are the people who you look to? You're like, hey, this person is not perfect or something, but they're striking a good balance. They're not a pastor, but they're still, again, speaking from, I don't know, they're speaking in a Christian and scripturally informed way and faithfully doing this in a way that, in a bold way, but that's also, you know, we won't use, it's not winsome, you know, we won't use that. But like, you know, they're still doing it in a way that is, you know, godly. Like who are there people that you can point to maybe for our benefit and the other listeners who?
Yeah, I mean, it's like in terms of like the economics type side of things, like something like the Acton Institute, where they're okay. kind of doing yep. this blending of economics
mm-hmm.
from people who have really seriously studied it and thought about it,
mm-hmm.
but with this theological lens. It's not just a like, I'm just going to spout off about mm-hmm. kind of whatever I want to be true or whatever I think yep. is true. You know, Christians are notoriously foolish and silly about questions around money and economics, and mm-hmm. economics is hard enough as it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think in around the big questions over the last few years over COVID and all those things, this guy, Jay Bhattacharya, who I just learned is a Christian,
mm-hmm.
you know, I just found him through this whole thing that was so controversial and people were so wound up about everything that he was calm and he was patient, but truthful
mm-hmm.
and like, no, like this is not true. And this is somebody, you know, he's a medical professional.
Didn't he just take Fauci's job?
Yeah, he has Fauci's job
yeah.
now.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't know. Just through yeah. this whole entire thing, I just really appreciated the way he would do it. And I didn't even know he was a Christian until a couple yeah. weeks ago. Okay. But there was something just calm about it and not, you know, trying to score points and not yeah. real wound up. And I don't know. I just think sometimes Christians, whether you're clergy or not, I think sometimes in our environment you forget that we are called to be gentle
mm-hmm.
and kind.
Yep.
And that can be, you know, empathy can become, and being nice can become this sin and this, you know, this horrible vice. But it's like, that doesn't mean you get to now just be
yeah.
a total jerk to yeah. everybody and just like, well, I'm speaking the truth.
Yeah. Shout out to Joe Rigney, Sin of Empathy. We need to get him on the pod somewhere.
So I think the issue that Wood is getting at is this combination of celebrity culture that already exists in America
mm-hmm.
has absolutely infiltrated the church.
Mm-hmm.
And then the culture war algorithms mm-hmm. and the outreach algorithms. And so he's talking about these people on social media that are going to try to be experts in all these topics and are going to discuss these things. And and the algorithms push us to extremes. They push us to try to get responses and get viral by people either retweeting how horrible this is or retweeting how, yes, they agree with this. And so you have this outrage kind of viral nature of social media that pushes the extremes. Yeah. And you already had a celebrity culture. Mm. And I think it's tempting. I mean, when I did church planting back in the day, it was like right when Twitter was just getting started and you have these young, it was the young, restless and reformed era. Mm-hmm. And yeah, these guys were getting Twitter accounts and blogging for all you young people out there. This is the thing where you would do and you would set up a site and write articles. Mm-hmm. And but yeah, that's a real, you could say, kingdom opportunity / carnal temptation. Mm-hmm. And I've known guys that even like neglect their churches and neglect their families so that they can get on the conference ring and do the speaking. And actually, there's a lot of guys that kind of start out as pastors and then they get a platform, like the whole emerging church movement. A bunch of those guys not only left the faith, but they left their churches because they had a platform.
Yeah.
And it's much easier to be a professional Christian speaker or influencer or author than to be in the trenches and ministering the gospel day in and day out in a local church.
To use a Lord of the Rings analogy,
yes,
I think sometimes with something, especially like social media, it can, you think that you are controlling the ring, but the ring is really controlling you.
It is a gift.
And it's yeah, it's the Boromir thing of like, hey, let's, you know, this is going to be great. We're going to have so much more influence. But yeah, I don't know. Just the way these algorithms work and the kinds of things that they encourage and the feedback that you're getting. I mean, it's almost like getting that kind of dopamine hit feedback of, oh, people really liked what I said about this thing.
Yeah.
I don't know that anyone can really can handle that kind of danger spiritually.
Yeah.
To, you know, it's just it kind of puts you into this rut of being more controversial, saying things that will make people more angry.
Yeah.
And it's just again, I'm not against all social media, but there are so many pitfalls there that I think you have to err on the side of being very careful.
It seems like, again, it kind of comes back to something we were talking about earlier, where it's got to do with how this is orienting. Because like if you're saying outrageous things, orienting around yourself, then that's wrong, right? But if you're like, again, obviously you have plenty of examples in the scripture of prophets, the Apostle Paul, Jesus saying outrageous things, because there were outrageous, you know, things that demanded them. But yeah, it is one of these things too, where you can think about this in the sense of, in the same context of like money printing. Like there's licit forms of fame printing, and then there's illicit forms. So like somebody like James has like 14,500 Twitter followers. That's a lot of Twitter followers. Now, again, who knows how many bots and all these things, but like he is somebody who is, he's not out there saying wild things. He's just, the guy writes more articles than anybody I know. He's in there publishing faithfully. He's working his job. He's got a beautiful family. And he's just content to try to add value and build faithfully over time. And he's accumulated a following versus the temptation to just say outrageous things to, you know, build your following faster or, you know, do whatever or attack people for whatever reason. So he's somebody I feel like is, you know, a good – he's somebody who I just appreciate in a lot of ways because it just doesn't seem like he's not out there looking for the clickbait. He has written a very famous and very widely read Tim Keller half takedown, I believe in the last year or two. But again, it was done in a way that wasn't bombastic and, you know, tried to acknowledge appreciation where he could while still pointing out real flaws in some of the things that he did. So
I feel like one of Tim's, I'm going to speak for you here for a second. You can refute it. It's not true.
Let another praise you, not your own lips. Let's go.
During COVID, one of your big frustrations was almost the opposite of this, where people were not wanting you to speak on a lot of things. That because it was like, oh, you're not a medical professional or, you know, whatever. Whenever it was really, I mean, yes, there's aspects to things that are like, yeah, you have to be a medical doctor and understand these, but there's Christian aspects to it, like mortality and death and caring for the sick. And these are things that a clergyman would have some acquaintance with, right? And you were kind of frustrated because people, even in your own congregation, would just sort of maybe write you off and not think to come talk to you about that, wouldn't even want your opinion on it. Is that a fair characterization?
Yeah, I mean, I think overall, my church did really well through all of that. And it was
surprisingly and wonderfully united through it. Mm. But yeah, I just think that the whole environment of fear and anxiety and this kind of squelching of dissent and of disagreement over things, it just almost unavoidably makes a lot of people, you know, they get anxious and they get worried, and you kind of just, without realizing it, absorb what's going on around you, including this kind of thing of, well, only experts in this certain field can speak to these things. And there's some truth to that, you know, that, yeah, ministers can't, they're not economists, they're not doctors, they're not scientists, and they shouldn't pretend like they are. But, you know, God's, all truth is God's truth. The Bible doesn't say everything about everything, but it speaks to everything. And one of the really terrible things about all of the COVID stuff was the way that it, I don't think it created it. I think it brought forward something that was already there, this obsession with this life and with maximizing your survival and your comfort in this life to the detriment of your soul, which is, that is very different than the way Scripture talks about what should be your priority and you know, what are you living for? That biological life and longevity is good, but it is a relative good. It's not the only good. And so, yeah, as a theologian, as a pastor, you can and you should speak to that and say, whoa, 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 whoa. There's something more important than surviving. There's something more important than existing, than not suffering. Actually, the Bible has a lot to say about suffering and about, you know, this life and the life to come. And so, yeah, I think, but it's hard in a society, in an environment where expertise and kind of credentials are viewed as like the ultimate trump card over everything.
Yeah. Trust the science.
Right. Bro. And it's like, well, you don't know anything. You know, you can't speak to this. You can't do this. And, you know, talking about Bitcoin, sometimes, you know, we bump up against this where people say, well, what do you know? You know, you don't have, you know, these acronyms after your name. Yeah. You can't talk about investments. You can't talk about money. Yeah. You can't talk about savings. And it's like, well, there's some truth to that. And I get that. But it's also like, hey, ministers for most of the history of the church have, yes, their primary calling is to the spiritual work of feeding the flock and of the church. But they also, you know, went out and tried to find all kinds of ways. And this is what's wonderful about Christian theology is you're always applying it to new things. You're always adapting it to new things. And you're saying, well, here's something over here I never thought of. Or I wonder what Scripture has to say to these things.
Yeah.
And ministers often did that. Not, you know, necessarily from the pulpit, but, you know, taking kind of new ideas and new questions and concepts of their day and saying, well, I think I want to speak to this. You know, Christ is the Logos. And so all things that are reasonable and rational and truthful are his ultimately. And I want to claim them for him and bring him to them and find him in them. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
So the irony does not escape me that Wood is critiquing, church leaders going out in the public social media sphere and commenting on all these different various topics under the sun that they may or may not be experts in. But given that very helpful warning against pride and pretending we have some expertise, Tim, would you offer your Twitter post to comment on? Do you have one or that you would offer to... get us a stimulating conversation.
I can't look it up right now because I have my phone set to block me from Twitter until late in the day.
Lord's day, isn't it?
That's true.
Well, not just because it's Sunday, but because I just can't handle the temptation to not be distracted by it all day long. And so I have it set so that I can only use it for a couple hours
a day. You just realize on me to text him things.
I'm in like multiple chat groups, and all it is people sharing Twitter posts with each other.
I am willing to make the sacrifice. I take one for our team.
That's right.
Okay. Do you want to give your one post to him to choose?
No, he has it in his head. He just can't read it.
Okay, go for it.
Well, no, I'm trying to remember the things I've noticed recently and liked recently. The only one coming to mind was something by, this is... totally new topic. Anthony Esselin, he's a Catholic literature professor. I find him very interesting, and I like a lot of things he has to say about raising boys and about literature. He posts these lists sometimes of really interesting books and novels, and he had posted something about his top 10 favorite religious novels.
I saw that.
One per author. And so, yeah, I don't know. I like to save those kinds of things and think about them. I love reading. I love reading.
So, what were the top ones? I can find that and list it out for you.
He had
Gilead on there, Marilyn Robinson.
Speaking of this, one, on there? Real quick, Gilead Brideshead
Revisited.
Do you see that Martin Scorsese is going to be making those books into films?
No.
At least several of them, yeah.
He had a Walker Percy book on there, but it was a book I'd never read. I love Walker Percy.
What's the dude's name again? I'm going to try to find it.
Anthony Esselin.
Yep.
Esolen.
What's the one about not driving your children to... what's the verse about fathers don't exasperate your children? It's something.
Oh yeah, it's in Ephesians 6.
You're tempting him.
number one. Oh, it went away. There it is. Number one, Tolkien, Lord of the Rings. Number one religious novel.
Amen. Hallelujah. Yeah.
I'm reading a book right now, again.
It's not an allegory.
By a Catholic philosopher about the philosophy of Lord of the Rings. It's great. Number two, Kristen Lavrin's Daughter by Sigurd Undset. I read that trilogy from Anthony Esselin's recommendation. It's great. Quo Vadis, my wife just read this.
Are any of these good for like teenagers, family reading? Is this, let us know which ones are just for.
He has Till We Have Faces on here, C.S. Lewis. Wow. You guys ever read that?
Yeah, my son read it for a class he's in, read it with my wife.
Okay. He has a Solzhenitsyn book on here that I haven't read, Cancer Ward. I read the abridged version of Gulag Archipelago.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not strong enough. Some other ones on here.
Was that worth it?
It was good.
Yeah.
It was long. The abridged version
was long.
Yeah, it was really long. There was a few really beautiful, wonderful stretches of Gulag Archipelago, most of it was like...
Was it a bridge too far?
It was not a bridge too far.
There will be a dad joke in each of these episodes.
You have too many kids to not have a dad joke.
This is interesting. G.K. Chesterton, The Man Who Is Thursday. My 12-year-old just read this book.
That's really? A good one.
It's interesting. He has this on here as a religious novel.
Oh, it's a full-on religious allegory, yeah.
I read The Power and the Glory a long time ago. I don't really remember it very well.
Who's that? Is that the stump fuck?
No, who is it? That is Graham Greene.
Oh, okay.
I've read some of his spy novels, but I haven't read that one in a long time. And then what's this other one on here? Yeah, some ones I've never heard of. But yeah, I'm interested in reading this Walker Percy book. I love Walker Percy. This is interesting. Walker Percy was a doctor, talking about doctors, who he got really sick and he never was really able to practice medicine. And he became a novelist.
Wow.
And Roman Catholic, but one of my just absolute favorite writers. He's funny. He's interesting. Have you guys ever read anything by Walker Percy?
Nope.
He has this great, he wrote it in the 80s. It's a mock self-help book, kind of in the middle of the self-help craze. It's called Lost in the Cosmos. It's really funny. It's interesting. It's fascinating. It'd be a good book to discuss in the realm of Bitcoin and technology because he's offering a lot of warnings in this self-help book about man's obsession with fixing things and solving things.
Yep.
And he has this great line in there where he says, you know, how is it possible that we know more about, you know, the Crab Nebula, you know, however many light years away than we do about ourselves?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just full of these wonderful kind of questions and observations about the tragedy and the farce of human life, where we busy ourselves with sex and science and technology and don't want to slow down and think about what it means to be human in God's world. So anyways, I love Walker Percy. I can't recommend him highly enough.
It's awesome.
I feel like that's a great, we should probably show up with one or two quotes from recent books that we're reading.
It's a good one.
And throw those in here too.
Let's do it.
That way we can sort of balance out the high-paced X feed.
Yes. With,
bit of that, but if you have like a sophisticated Twitter follow like this brother does, you're going to get some meaty stuff. I have some sophisticated intellectual artsy stuff, not just like my macro Bitcoin.
Unlike Jim, you're saying, right? He just follows dumb people.
Oh, yeah, I just follow vapid. Dumb people. Like, I think Thank God for Bitcoin was one of them. They went all Studio Ghibli just for like an entire day. I just couldn't.
Oh my gosh.
Dude, April Fool's. Okay. So now we're building out
this. Designing? Is that what you?
We're building out this new podcast and we're building it as we sail, right? So here's my idea.
Building it as we sail is a mixed metaphor there.
Mixed metaphors.
That's a sign of genius.
No.
I do that all
the
time.
There's a double entendre in there you can figure out later.
Okay.
I will too.
Okay.
Build it as you sail? We're going to
build the airplane in the air?
Yeah, there you go. We're going to fly it as we craft it.
As we row.
So here's the idea. So in each of these episodes, we also need to share the absolute funniest thing that we read that week, the post, the meme.
I was going to say, is this the meme? This is basically just a meme thing.
This is like, what was the, like, LOL, I absolutely died laughing, and I shared it with my best buds, even if it was a little politically incorrect.
I can't really share a lot of this.
I was going to say.
Okay. So, safe for work, not going to get you canceled too badly, but really, what's the funniest thing that you saw or shared this week?
I can't do this. This is going to be... I have to go through a bunch of stuff to find him.
John...
You guys just did one. Just get the highlight. Whoever does it first.
You guys like John Crist, the comedian?
Yeah, I know he is.
I listened to his stuff, and I found out that he's a player, and I'm like, I'm not as impressed with him. But
okay. I don't know anything about him personally, but did release a... He visited a Mormon church video. It was...
We are in Salt Lake City, really Utah
funny.
Right now.
I love my LDS neighbors, but it was really funny.
Okay, play it.
Well, I mean, it's like a 5-minute video.
Oh, yeah, okay. No, we're not doing that.
So it wasn't really a tweet.
Okay.
I can find a tweet for you.
It's got to be a meme, and we can.
I found this pretty funny. This was right after the whole Signal controversy, where the guy from the Atlantic.
Is this the Lord of the Rings one? Chat.
No, so it's a screenshot of three iMessage notifications. The first one says anxiety. What if you're not good enough? The second one says depression. Everyone hates you. The third one says, Pete Hegseth, we're going to bomb Yemen.
Okay, I have a Lord of the Rings one. Did you guys see this? It's the four squares, and it's Legolas, you have my bow. It's Gimli, you have my axe. It's Aragorn, you have my sword. And then it's Saruman. Was I supposed to be added to this chat?
Oh man! All right,
you have to send it to me later so I can like overlay it on.
Exactly. We'll do it.
There's all right. This is a little bit more of a deep cut Lord of the Rings one, but as long as we're on Lord of the Rings memes, it's the one I have closest. It's who's the? I don't even can't remember the character's name. The woman who likes Aragorn. But he doesn't like her back. What?
It's Eowyn.
So you have Eowyn. It's Eowyn wearing the Gimli helmet. It's the thing where it's like it's supposed to be Gimli talking to Aragorn. And so it's three panels, Gimli, Aragorn, Gimli. But it's Eowyn wearing Gimli's helmet. And so she says, never thought I'd die fighting side by side with the great love of my life. And the second panel is Aragorn saying, what about side by side with just a friend? And the third panel is Eowyn just looking like sad. Oh, my gosh.
And that goes back to the Only Friends.
Exactly.
The place where we began this.
But in the book, she ends up with Faramir, right?
I know. It's true. Yeah. Yeah.
But she did well.
He's the good guy.
That's why.
Is that the Only Friends podcast? Is that what we're calling
it? No, we're not calling it Only Friends. No, the Lord of the Rings, it should have been a limited series. It should have been like an 8-episode series, or maybe even more, 15-episode series instead of just 3 movies. It'd have been so much better. There's so much rich detail.
It got like 8 hours out of the Hobbit book of just
we don't speak of such things.
Banality.
But TV wasn't really a thing back then. I mean, it was a thing, but like we're in the golden age of like series.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you guys dress up for the midnight showings back in the day of Lord of the Rings?
No,
I went to them.
Did you?
But I didn't dress up.
I went, I didn't dress up.
Oh.
Yeah. I saw the people that dressed up.
You did dress up for Harry Potter.
Didn't dress up. He went and dressed up. I went, but it was like 2 weeks later or something. Okay. I don't know.
You dressed up for Harry Potter though, right?
No, not Harry Potter. I didn't read Harry Potter until I met my wife, and she said that I had to read them to date her. I said, okay.
That's how you know you found the one right there.
I will compromise my faith and study witchcraft for this woman.
Study witchcraft.
I'm joking. I'm not really a Harry Potter hater, but I'm giving the pastor a hard time. Okay, well, this is awesome. I think we're onto something. If you, our dear listener, have listened to this, somehow you ran into it and found it in the deep recess corners of the internet, give us a comment. Give us your reflection. Is this worth making a show of? Would you listen to it again? Or did you turn it off after the first five minutes? So let us know. I had fun. You guys have fun?
I guess if we don't, does this mean if we
they
don't
turn it off after the first 5 minutes,
they'll never hear
this. They never heard that. We can put it in the beginning.
Yeah. If you made it this far, send us one Bitcoin. We'll send you two.
That's right.
Yeah. Like, subscribe, share.
We should do a whole episode about our if we have altcoining stories. That'd be a fun the perils of altcoining.
Confessions.
Yes, altcoin confessions.
I kept myself pure.
Let's go.
Of course you did.
I have a humdinger of a story, but yeah, it'll be.
It was a pretty good one, too.
Oh, man. You got in, in fairness, though, you got in at a time that it was easy to stay pure because all coins were not looking that great whenever you got in. They were.
Yeah. So. Back in 2010. Is that
you got in like 2007, I think.
Yeah. you got in with Scottie Pippen in, you know, 1996 or whatever. Yeah.
And that's Satoshi.
Anyhow.
Okay, guys, this was fun.
Thanks, Ash.
Thanks.